Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh, man, this is a great idea. So our friend Becky Hillier, she went on our Facebook page, I think, yesterday, and she says, hey, guys, hey, join in. You know, we're going to be looking at the bright side with Becky every Friday here on Freedom Friday. And I saw our friend Living Large Larry, who used to occupy these very studios here on KBUL Billings. He says, oh, man, we should syndicate a Bright Side with Becky program, and I'll play it all the way out here in Gainesville, Florida, there which is go. Where Living Large is at right now. That was kind of cool. Becky, good to see you.
Good to see you, Aaron. Thanks for having me. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. It's a great Friday. We had our friend Tim from Savage in the studio in the 6 o'clock hour because he's doing some basketball games here at the Metro later today. And then our good friend George Blackard.
Yes.
He is back in Montana. He moved down to Texas, but he's back back here for a little while. So he's going to join us for a Freedom Friday starting in the 8 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
So that'll be kind of fun.
George is great. We served on the Big Sky Honor Flight board together, and he did some really great work with Big Sky Honor Flight. And that was such an incredible experience to be a part of. So really happy to share that with George, and glad he's doing well.
Yeah, that Big Sky Honor Flight, I know we've talked about it before here recently, but you know, it took a whole plane load of World War II veterans, and then they'd have a caregiver, could have been a grandson or a spouse or whoever, whole plane loads of Montana World War II veterans back to Washington, D.C. to see their World War II memorial. And, yeah, you were a big part of that. George Blackard was a big part of that. I got to tag along on one of the trips and did some live radio from over there as well, and that was just such an incredible thing. And, man, what a blessing. The people that you get to meet along the way and then the experiences like that are just, it's like flying with the Blue Angels. You will never forget an experience like that. Flying with World War II veterans to D.C., flying with the Blue Angels, once-in-a-lifetime experience you'll never forget.
Absolutely. Truly meaningful for me. And I tell people this all the time. I mean, of course, having my children was monumental and one of those awesome milestones you have. But being a part of the Big Sky Honor Flight Board and being a part of just that organization and that movement was incredibly meaningful. Aaron, we flew 9 flights with 755 total, mostly World War II veterans, back to Washington, D.C. in 2.5 years, raised $1.4 million. It was amazing how Montanans from every corner of the state said, I want to be a part of this. These men and women deserve this honor. And they donated, and we got those 9 flights and got all of those veterans back to Washington, D.C. to see their memorials. And I wish I could just share what is in my brain right now with everybody, just the incredible moments that we all witnessed at one time or another. These men who, you know, were 6'3", this gentleman standing in front of the Iwo Jima Memorial, and he was remembering all of his friends who had died on Iwo Jima. Mm-hmm. And he just, his 6'3" frame just started shaking as he cried. And so I just hugged him for a couple of minutes while he cried and shared stories with me, because I had been to Iwo Jima through this tour with the Department of Defense and the Miss America pageant. So we had that little connection there, and it was just amazing to see how transformative those flights were for those veterans.
A lot of the families, too, they heard stories from Grandpa for the first time ever.
They opened up for the very first time.
For the first time ever.
It's incredible.
And that's why I had families saying, hey, can you send us the audio from that? Because we'd never heard Grandpa say these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely remarkable. All right, hold that thought back with Becky right after this.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area today, high temperatures will range from around 50 in Bozeman to the mid-50s in the Billings area. For tonight, we can expect clear skies, lows in the upper 20s and low 30s. And then for Saturday with sunny skies, high temperatures ranging from near 60 in Billings to the lower 50s in Bozeman. Clear to partly cloudy skies continue into Saturday night. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frobley.
It's February 27th, and this is your Fox Daily Snapshot. Today's National Pokemon Day, marking the anniversary of the Japanese release of the game on this day in 1996. Also, on this day in 2020, the Dow Jones Index suffers its biggest points fall in history, closing down 1,190.95 in New York over concerns about COVID-19. 1 year later in 2021, the U.S. gives the green light to the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the third such shot to protect against the coronavirus. Also on this day in 2013, Pope Benedict presents his farewell address to Vatican City. A train crashes into a buffer at Cairo's main railway station in 2019, killing 25, injuring dozens in Egypt. Born on this day in England in 1932, legendary star of the silver screen, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm CJ Papa. That's your Fox Daily Snapshot.
So I did a story about Butte, about copper, and about Donald J. Trump and what he had to say about copper this week on Truth Social. Then I thought, you know what? I'm going to reach out to our buddy Evan Wilson. He's an incredible pollster. He is the numbers guy. I said, hey, Evan, how well did President Trump do in Butte, the Democrat stronghold of Butte, compared to other presidents? He shared some numbers that go all the way back to Dwight Eisenhower. Check out that full story. Go to MontanaTalks.com. So apparently Joe Rogan talked about a mysterious Montana landmark on his Joe Rogan podcast. Where is it? What is it? The answer, MontanaTalks.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, I'm very tempted to just tell you about all the funny, cool, great stuff that Becky Hillier is sharing on her Facebook page. But she's been looking into some specific good news stories, heartwarming stories, looking at the bright side of things. So let's look at the bright side before anything else, Becky.
Well, I have a great story out of Arizona, Aaron, and this one just made me smile the entire time I read it. In this RV park in Mesa, Arizona, there's a 96-year-old gentleman named Bill, and every morning he gets up and he loads up the basket on his bicycle with treats for dogs and cats in the neighborhood, and he pedals around the RV park every morning, stopping at every home and dropping off treats for the dogs and the cats. And he's been doing this every day, rain or shine, for 23 years. 23 years, and it all started because he has dogs himself, and he would give them treats, and he thought, you know, we have so many pets in the RV park here, so maybe they'd like some too. So he started leaving some treats for some of the dogs, and then he thought, well, I can't leave them out, so he pretty much adopted every dog in the RV park, 96 years old, on his bicycle, distributing treats to all the neighborhood dogs and cats every single morning. And the owner said what's really hysterical is the cats and the dogs know his schedule. So they sit there and they wait for him to come by, and their tails start wagging and they start barking when Bill comes into the neighborhood. And the neighbor said, of course, he's doing such a good thing for our pets, but he's also doing a good thing for us. And just the way that it has boosted the community feel of the RV park neighborhood that he lives in, and everybody just absolutely loves him, and they don't ever want him to stop. And so a lot of the neighbors will just purchase treats themselves, dog and cat treats, leave them on Bill's doorstep, so they don't ever want it to become a financial burden for him, and they don't ever want him to run out, because then the dogs and the cats would revolt.
Oh yeah, so, but what's going on here? Oh,
exactly.
Now we're stuck with you losers. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway,
that would be fun to see. Is there a video of that showing that guy?
I think there is, yeah.
You know who could tell that story so well? Well, of course you can, but is it Steve Hartman?
Was he? Yes. Oh, he's.
Could you imagine him doing a CBS TV piece on that?
He is such an incredible storyteller, and he has a lot of great stories like that, too. But, I mean, the nice thing, Bill is 96 years old. He's been doing this every day for 23 years. At 96, to be able to still get his leg over a bicycle and pedal around the neighborhood, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 54, and my mobility issues some morning are questionable. So I just think what an awesome thing for him. Of course, it boosts his spirit and his mood. But he also gets in some physical activity. activity. It makes the whole neighborhood feel great, and they just have such a sense of community and camaraderie because of Bill.
I don't know if your kids were still little when the cartoon movie Bolt came out. Did you ever watch the cartoon movie Bolt?
I don't think so.
Well, there's it's funny because he was bringing treats out to the dogs, and then he's like, okay, I guess I'll give the cats treats too. But in this show Bolt, it's about a dog and a cat mm-hmm. that end up, you know, I forget what their mission is, and they got to, anyway, so these two are traveling together, and they're like, oh, we need to go get some food. And the dog's like, oh, well, let's go over to this RV park. And the dog's wagging his tail, smiling. And the people open up their little RV door, camper door. Oh, what a cute puppy. Here you go. And then the cat comes up. Get out of here, cat. And they're throwing pots and pans at the cat. You know,
cats get no respect.
That's right.
They're not Rodney Dangerfield of pets.
Oh, yeah.
No, they're awesome. And I remember in our old neighborhood where we used to live, we had this wonderful neighbor, John. And he had been retired since he was about 53. He lived all over the world, worked for oil companies. He was a geologist. He retired at 53. When we met him, he was about 73. So we've always had dogs, and he would come home. Our dogs would sit in the backyard waiting for John. Very same scenario as an RV park with Bill. And they would wait for John. If they saw him leave, they would sit there and wait for him to come back. And he had two buckets full of dog treats in his garage. And he would grab one for Dutch and one for Enzo. And he would come out and straddle because he didn't want Dutch, who was bigger, getting Enzo's treats. So John would throw Dutch's treats over here so he'd distract him, and then he'd come over and he'd give little Enzo his treats, and then he'd, you know, give him a few pats, and they just loved him. So when I read that story, I thought of our neighbor John and how he used to do that for our dogs.
Our dog freaks out now. So, you know, we got our camper right before the COVID craziness hit. So we had perfect timing on that. I was at the RV and boat show at the Metro earlier this week, checking out all the new boats, all the new campers, all the new toys. And they have really cool inflatable pickup bed toppers. You know,
oh,
like the topper?
I've seen those. Yeah.
They make inflatable ones now, and they're really light. Anyway, they're made in Missoula, Montana, I guess, but they're selling them down at the RV and boat show right now. But anyway, our dog, whenever our dog can tell that we're like making trips back and forth.
He knows what's up.
Loading the camper. When we're loading the camper, the dog's like, you better be taking me. She's like spinning around, like freaking out, you know, just worried that we might leave her behind on the camping trip.
And of course you don't. Of course you take her.
Sometimes. Because she's a beagle and she's loud and she wants to bark at everything. But like we went camping on a friend's ranch, and that one's fun because you're out on a friend's ranch. You got 8-9 family campers out there. You just leave your doors open and everybody shares food and cooks food.
And the dogs can run free.
And the dogs can just run free and, you know, chase gophers or whatever. So. So that's a fun way to go camping, or glamping, if you want to call it glamping, because you got your camper there with all the griddle grill and everything else.
Oh,
so,
man. Yeah, that sounds good. Missed that invitation, I guess.
Well, especially right now. I mean, look at that. The view that we've got of the Beartooth Mountains right now is absolutely incredible. Maybe Becky Hillier will share one on her Facebook page. Hey, if you got a beautiful view in Butte or Bozeman or out on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, wherever your view is right now, well, send me a note on x.com/AaronFlint, post it there, or message us on the Montana Talks app. It'd be great to see the view out your window this morning as well. Becky's got some more great stories to share with us right after this.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
A housing reality that has been in place in the high-cost cities for many years has started to arrive in Montana, and that is this. It takes two full incomes to be able to afford a house. One-income households, even for many above-average paying jobs, simply can't do it, especially with mortgage rates above 7%. Now let's throw in another data point, child care costs, which can easily top $12,000 per year for a family with two children. Simply put, the cost of housing and feasibility of starting a family are intermeshed. That makes having a family even more of a dilemma. When both spouses need to work to afford a house, that can necessitate expensive child care as well. Those facts might help explain why the fertility rate, defined as the number of children born to women aged 15 to 50, has been falling since 2007 in the U.S. A rate of 2.1 is considered sufficient to keep population from falling over time. Today's rate of just over 1.6 falls quite short of that. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Fox in the Fast Lane.
NASCAR Cup Series drivers kick off the 2025 season this Sunday in the 67th running of the Daytona 500. The front row for the race was set Wednesday night in qualifying, and Chase Briscoe was off to a good start with his new Joe Gibbs Racing team, placing the number 19 Toyota on the pole. 2022 Daytona 500 champion Austin Cindric starts alongside him. The rest of the field was determined in the dual races Thursday night. 9 open teams competed for 4 spots available in the Daytona 500. Former NASCAR Cup Series champions Martin Truex Jr. and Jimmy Johnson were the 2 fastest open teams, while the other 2 spots went to the highest finishing open charter teams in the dual races. 4-time Indy 500 champion Julio Castroneves is using a new rule to enter the Daytona 500. That rule allows NASCAR to add a car to the field driven by a part-time Cup Series competitor. The green flag waves at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. For Fox in the Fast Lane, I'm Joe Morgan, Fox News.
If you bought a new electric vehicle last year, you may qualify for a tax credit depending on the brand. I'm Hillary Barsky with your Fox Business Tax Tip coming up.
I'm Emily Campagno, and this is the Fox True Crime Podcast, bringing you closer to the story than you ever thought possible. Subscribe at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. These are the stories that keep you up at night.
You might be entitled to a tax break depending on which electric vehicle you purchased, or CPA and tax attorney Alan J. Strauss says
the dealer may just reduce the price by the amount of the credit. That is something to make sure you clarify with the car dealer.
You would have to know if the dealer is building the credit into the price of the car.
Each manufacturer is entitled to pass through only a limited number of credits for a limited number of automobiles.
So get the information from the dealer in terms of what kind of credit you're entitled to. Hillary Barsky, Fox News.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordland.
As Congress works to draft a farm bill that farmers and ranchers would like to see passed this year, American Sheep Industry Association President Ben LaFelt, a Montana rancher, testified to the Senate Agriculture Committee this week on several issues impacting the sheep industry, one of those being risk management tools.
The only thing we've had to work with the last few years are, you know, end result management tools, LIP, you know, LFP, something that's already happened. In the sheep industry, we don't have that upfront ability to insure our product. We don't have a futures market. So we made sure that the Senate Ag Committee knew that, and that there was a directive, and that I think Senator Bozeman is online at making sure that we have something. So if we have that boardwalk, that springboard in our farm bill, then we can have direct that message from our legislators to say, hey, they have this directive, let's do it, we need it done. This is an industry that doesn't have that upfront risk protection.
If you'd like to watch or listen to my entire conversation on the steps of the U.S. Capitol with Montana rancher Ben LaFelt, president of the American Sheep Industry Association, check out my Facebook page, Lane Nordland, Ag Broadcaster. From Washington, D.C., I'm Lane Nordland. Have a great day, everyone.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about Doge. You know, Elon Musk, Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency, which is kind of funny because when we were talking about dogs and cats and that guy down in Arizona, I always call our dog Doge. Get over here, Doge. But anyway, we're going to talk about Doge. Did you guys know that the organization that Doge, basically Doge, if you look back on the history, it was originally created under Barack Obama as the U.S. Digital Service, but it's now been retooled by Trump and Elon Musk to be Doge. So anyway, we're going to get into a little bit of that history, talk more about Doge and some of the fraud, waste, and abuse that's being uncovered. Ilya Shapiro with the Manhattan Institute is going to be on here in just a few minutes. But, yeah, let's keep looking at the bright side of things here with Becky Hillier. Becky, you know, it was funny. You were talking about that RV park down in Arizona and, you know, how this guy, you know, one way that he just simply spreads the cheer is he gives these treats out to the dogs and cats throughout the RV park, and how it doesn't just cheer them up, it cheers up their owners as well. My wife's dad, he lives in a mobile home park down there, you know, with a lot of, you know, senior citizens. He might be listening on the app right now, but he used to own a bar up in Trout Creek, Montana, which is right down the road from Thompson Falls. Yeah. And you've got a good news story out of Thompson Falls, Montana. But anyway, so he owned a really cool bar
in Trout Creek called the Wayside, but now he's spending part of the time down in Arizona. And so, but part of the way he's spreading cheer is he's running a karaoke night for everybody.
I love it.
At the senior citizens mobile home park down there. So
I love it. You should have him get video of that. That would be
I should see if we can get some video.
Would make people smile.
We for our wedding, we ended up getting married up there. Jessica and I did. It was supposed to be just a quick wedding before I went over to Afghanistan, and he did a karaoke night then. And man, it was some entertaining stuff. My dad's a really good singer, mm-hmm. and he was belting out. It was either Dean Martin or Frank Sinatra, and they said it was echoing across the reservoir.
Oh,
and,
I'm sure it was.
It was just my brothers were, four blocks down, and they're like, oh, yeah, you could hear it four blocks
dad.
Down. So, yeah, there he
That's
is.
That's my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but Thompson Falls, right down the road from there. You've got a good news story out of Thompson Falls, Montana.
Yeah, I found this on KPAX out of Missoula. So the Thompson River Animal Care Shelter, they go by Tracks. They have chipped in, like a lot of animal shelters do, whenever there is some kind of natural disaster. It might be a tornado, a hurricane, or the wildfires in California. And a lot of times they'll chip in all across the country and take in displaced pets. So Tracks has taken in 50 displaced dogs from the California wildfires. They were working with this organization called Dog Is My Co-Pilot, and it's a service that flies dogs across the country to their new homes. And so 50 of those dogs from California were flown by Dog Is My Co-Pilot to Missoula, and then they were loaded up in vans and taken 2 hours away to Thompson Falls. And so the shelter there, they adopt about 1,000 dogs a year total. And so they had an influx of these 50 additional dogs from California. And I just thought that was a really great representation of how people always like to chip in. You know, like we talked about a couple of weeks ago with the artist who wanted to do something for her friends in California who had lost their homes. And so she started drawing pictures of their homes and giving them to the homeowners who lost their property as a keepsake and a gift. Well, way up here in Montana, far removed from California, Thompson Falls and Tracks are taking in these 50 dogs to make sure that they get good homes in Montana or anywhere else, but they're helping to alleviate some of the stress and pressure of shelters across the country who've also taken in additional animals. So I just thought that was a really nice story. And so if you live in Thompson Falls or the area, I don't speak officially for Tracks, but I'm sure that they would love any donations of blankets or food or leashes. You might give them a call and see if they need any additional help since they have all of these new animals to take care of. But good job, Tracks, and way to go.
I like the fact, too, that, hey, California, we will take your dogs, but just keep the people back there in California. Keep the people. We will. You can fly the dogs here, but everybody else has to stay in L.A. Help
everybody
rebuild.
Loves dogs, right?
That's right.
I'm worried
That's
about
right.
people who don't like dogs or animals in general. So anyway, that was just a great story, and it was nice of KPAX to do that story for Tracks. And so, again, if you live in the area or know somebody who does, maybe get in touch with Tracks and see if they need a little extra help since they have all of these new mouths to feed in their shelter.
I had to laugh about the California reference there because, of course, we've got a lot of refugees who got the heck out of California in the last few years. But we have a story on our Montana Talks website this morning. Which state do Montanans dislike the most? Ding, 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 California.
I was going to say, I don't think that there's a mystery with that really too much.
But if it's any consolation, it's not, as Derek Wolf writes here, it won't come as a surprise to many that California is the state that Montanans dislike the most. However, it looks like most of the West can't stand California.
Oh,
so we're not
California.
Alone. Poor California.
Poor California.
But look at the bright side. Your dogs have a nicer home here in Montana now.
They're living the life. They're living the Yellowstone lifestyle.
Tongues are wagging, ears are flapping everywhere. Becky, this is kind of random. Have you ever gotten a chance to meet Dallas Knight, female Army veteran?
No, I haven't.
Here in Montana. Oh,
heard of her, though.
You got to meet Dallas Knight, and you got to hear about Operation Juliet, what she is doing. So, anyway, she wrote a book about her experience. It's basically her journal entries from when she was a machine gunner in Iraq.
Oh, wow.
And she turned it into a book with some notes that put everything into context. But Operation Juliet, I went to a great fundraising event for her last night that Elizabeth Schumacher put on. from White Lotus Realty. But OperationJuliet.org is the website. Check it out. She's putting together an all women veterans retreat, a female veterans retreat for female veterans, and they're gonna do the retreat out at the Quiet Waters Ranch in the Gallatin Valley, which is a beautiful location. It's the home base for Warriors in Quiet Waters. So if you want to help raise the funds to host these female veterans for this retreat, really is a great deal that she's putting together here, and so important. Because as you can imagine, a lot of these veteran programs are very male centric, yeah. Right? They offer programs that are mostly enjoyed mm-hmm. by males. There's not a very a lot of stuff that stands out for women. Not that women don't like to do all those other things, but so OperationJuliet.org, check it out. Really good deal, and we'll have to get Dallas back on the show here at some point as well. Speaking of the Montana Talks website. Outdoor Rodeo Woo-hoo! Is coming back to the Metra in Billings. You also work for the Nile Rodeo, running their communications, and then Rodeo Billings. Look, people all across Montana, they will travel for rodeo. There's just something about being outdoors in August.
Right.
You can be inside and the rodeo will still be great, mm-hmm. but outdoor rodeo. Plus, you guys just announced your big lineup this week. The stock, the announcers, the right. rodeo entertainers, and more.
Yeah. So we are really excited about it. And I was telling you during the break when I was at the Mate Show over the weekend, we were talking about Rodeo Billings, and people were so excited and enthused about having outdoor rodeo back at Montana Fair and in Billings. Like you said, in August, rodeo, any rodeo in Montana in the summertime really should be outside. It really should. And the grandstands were torn down in 2020, and so we haven't been able to have a facility or an arena for outdoor rodeo. But an outdoor arena is being built on the grounds of Metro Park, and July 15th is the drop-dead date. Everything has to be ready and set for Rodeo Billings for August 14th, 15th, and 16th. And what's really exciting is we have Bob Tallman, and we have two announcers. Bob Tallman is one of them, and he is the voice of pro rodeo. He is a living legend. He's been inducted into every Hall of Fame you can imagine. He will be here to announce the rodeo along with Garrison Allen, who is a rising star as a rodeo announcer.
And massive cash prize increases, too,
yes.
for those of you that do rodeo across Montana. There's some
yes.
big prize bumps in there. So.
Yep.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. And so they will have the grandstands will be built.
Yes,
then.
They All will right. be ready.
All
they
right.
have to be.
They better be. Yeah, they will be. Yeah. Yeah. There's something about a deadline that makes it happen.
All right.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump right into it. We've got a great guest joining us right now on Montana Talks. In fact, when I had this email in my inbox for this interview opportunity, I was like, wow, yeah, let's jump on this one right away. Not only because we cannot talk enough about all the great work that's being done by Elon Musk and President Trump and DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, but joining us right now, we've got Ilya Shapiro, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and also the Director of Constitutional Studies there as well. Great to have you on Montana Talks. Thanks for freeing up some time for us this morning.
Good to be with you. There's a lot of energy and a lot of excitement and a lot of criticism from the other side of Elon and his musketeers, as they call them. All of this operation is not as unprecedented as some might think.
Yeah, and what I think is most interesting is because a lot of people are thinking, okay, DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency, this is something that President Trump created and now Elon Musk is tasking, but how are they officially able to operate? How are they doing what they are doing? And actually, they're operating under an entity that was created under former President Barack Obama, apparently.
Right. So there's this thing, an office within the White House, within the executive office of the president, called the United States Digital Service, USDS, which helped all federal agencies with their websites, with all sorts of internet-related, tech-related functionality. And what Trump did was rename it. So now it's the U.S. DOGE service, the Department of Government Efficiency, as you said, and then hired Musk and, you know, his team as special government employees, which under statute it allows the White House to do. There are, you know, 400 or something staffers in the executive office of the president, from the White House counsel on down, the Council of Economic Advisors, all of these different. When we say White House staff, that's what we talk about. And so DOGE is part of that. And what they're doing is going agency by agency and looking at trying to cut out waste, fraud, and abuse. So it's kind of this internal executive branch thing that that Trump decided to do. And it, like I said, it's not unprecedented. Bill Clinton, for example, had a reinventing government initiative that I might be dating myself, but Al Gore ran that, and they offered buyouts to lots of federal workers to try to trim things down. So, you know, not everything is new.
I was going to say, Barack Obama deported illegal aliens. Bill Clinton let go and fired federal employees. But now that we're $37 trillion in debt and we're running a $2 trillion deficit that President Trump inherited from Joe Biden right now, all the pearl clutching over any efficiencies in government whatsoever is just every day in the fake news media.
I mean, they have all these interviews with federal workers and agency folks saying, how am I going to live now? I'm losing my job. Well, you know, people lose their jobs. It's unfortunate. And in the world, this is sometimes what you have to deal with as companies restructure, as there's disruption from technology or what have you. And indeed, you know, the DOGE does not have the authority to, say, shut down the Department of Education. It would take an act of Congress to do that. But they can restructure things. They can recommend that Trump move, for example, student loan administration to the Treasury or civil rights investigations to the Justice Department, things like that. What they've been doing with USAID, moving a lot of its components to the State Department, or canceling some contracts that don't make sense. Now, they're not, you know, violating anything that Congress has legislated. You know, there's a debate about whether the president is impounding money, meaning Congress appropriated, the president refuses to spend it. No, they're just reevaluating different kinds of contracts. Congress does not go contract by contract in terms of what it lays out, and they're figuring all that out.
Yeah, Stephen Miller, of course, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, who's been with President Trump since day one, especially on border and immigration policies. I mean, he laid that out because, the Democrats were trying to say, oh, well, Congress funded these specific programs. And he said, no, they didn't fund the sex changes in Guatemala and these other things. Like, they might have funded the USAID in a spending bill, but this is all discretionary. So it is at the discretion of the executive branch. So that's why they are able to go and peel a lot of this stuff back. And they think they can peel about $1 trillion of it back, and then Congress is going to have to peel the other trillion. What has been the most impressive or the most the craziest things that you have seen and read and heard about what DOGE is uncovering?
Well, my colleague Chris Rufo has been working on the Education Department, and that seems to be the target of DOGE now. They're going agency by agency, and just millions and millions of dollars for DEI stuff. That's just outrageous to think that this is what our money is going towards, and most of it is just going to pay bureaucrats, educational bureaucrats, educrats, to do all of these trainings and struggle sessions and what have you. Very little of it even filters down into you know, community schools. So this is not just you know, ideologically bad and illegal, violating civil rights laws, what have you, but it's such a huge waste of money, especially when people are complaining that their local schools are under-resourced or what have you.
Oh, yeah. So if the Billings schools in Billings, Montana, the largest school district in the state of Montana, oh, we don't have enough money for security cameras, and oh, we need money for this, we're going to charge the... You know, if that Department of Education money that's being wasted could instead be block-granted back to the states, maybe we could use that money for entry-level teacher pay or for security cameras or for, you know, armed security guards like school resource officers, like what Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter is doing throughout Cascade County right now. I mean, there's a number of ways, but no, they want to waste that money on DEI garbage.
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, it would take an act of Congress to do the block grants. That would be a significant, serious reform of how the Education Department operates. And indeed, when people talk about shutting down the Department of Education, that's generally what they say. Rather than have all those people in Washington, D.C., pushing papers at best, you send that money back to the states. You retain certain, as I said, civil rights investigations and certain things for kids with disabilities and student loan administration, what have you. But most of what the Department of Education does is, wasting money is the least of it. It's wasting money for things that are value subtracting to the education of this country's students.
We're chatting with Ilya Shapiro, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. By the way, speaking of education, you've actually got a book titled, as I understand it, Lawless, The Miseducation of America's Elites. How does that tie in, what you write about in your book with this whole conversation as well?
Sure. Yeah, this came out about a month ago, and it builds on my so-called lived experience with Georgetown Law School 3 years ago. If you Google my name, you can find that whole story. Go to my Substack, Shapiro's Gavel, or buy the book to get all the dirty details in Lawless. And so I use that as a jumping-off point for describing the failures in higher education, and especially in legal education. And I focus on law schools not simply because I'm a lawyer, but because it really, for practical purposes, law schools graduate the gatekeepers of our legal and political institutions. So it's really significant if these law students are taught or not disabused of the notion that all of our institutions are illegitimate and need to be deconstructed and reconstructed according to a new privilege hierarchy and all things like that. And so there's been failures of ideology, bureaucracy, leadership. So even as in society writ large, there's been a vibe shift, or we probably passed peak woke, although we can't get complacent about that. In higher ed, in academia, there's not the same feedback mechanism. So a lot of these institutions are simply lost. Some educational leaders will be savvy enough to recognize that things need to change. But that's the battle that we're in.
Yeah. We've got about a minute before I got to hit the hard break here. And then Ilya Shapiro, if you want to join us for the remainder of the hour, please stick around. I'd love to keep chatting with you. But if you do have to run, we got about a minute. What do you want to tell folks across Montana?
Put me on the spot. Yeah. So here's the thing. We've seen dozens and dozens of executive orders and executive actions. It actually baffles me that seems like DOGE is the focus of the left's opposition to Trump right now. I would have thought it would be more kind of political red meat like DEI or gender theory or even green energy things that Trump is doing. But executive orders can only do so much. And as we've learned, you live by the executive action, you die by the executive action. We've had this ping-ponging back and forth depending on who's in the White House. So what I really hope is not only that all of these federal agencies keep the pedal to the metal in enforcing these executive orders, but that Trump wrestles Congress into passing legislation to codify this stuff, which is almost all of what he's been doing is overwhelmingly popular.
That's right.
Yeah,
no, that's exactly right. And that's what we as Montanans need to always remind our congressional delegation of, is codify everything that's being done right now. Great point. All right, hold that thought. Back after this.
At T-Mobile, our critical mission is providing unparalleled 5G coverage for when connectivity is mission critical. Introducing T-Priority, America's best 5G network experience for first responders, even in times of congestion. More capacity, faster speeds, better coverage. T-Priority from T-Mobile. Built for tomorrow's emergencies. Ready today. Discover more at t-priority.com.
For qualifying organizations on eligible rate plans, coverage not available in some areas and may be impacted by emergencies.
Fox News commentary.
Anti-ICE activists are actively endangering the lives of our brave and noble immigration agents, and it should be treated as treason. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
every hour of every day, Fox News Radio is there with the latest breaking news and information you rely on.
This is a Fox News alert.
I'm Lisa Brady.
I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.
With Fox News correspondents around the globe.
At the White House,
Simon Owen in London.
On Capitol Hill, Jared Halpern, Fox News.
The news that matters most to you. The top headlines, all in one place. Listen and follow the Fox News hourly update at foxnewspodcasts.com or ask your smart speaker to play Fox News.
We knew as soon as Borders Are Tom Holman gave his ICE agents the green light to actually enforce immigration law, there would be idiots trying to stop it. But this latest tactic, happening mostly in the L.A. area, goes beyond blocking traffic or waving Mexican flags. This is treason. Anti-ICE activists are actually tracking ICE agents, stalking them, really, and disrupting their work. And they aren't just random people doing it, either. They are coordinated groups who have set up organized patrols to locate ICE activity and thwart it. And worse, other anti-ICE thugs are not only stalking the agents, they are doxing them and putting their names, faces, phone numbers, and even addresses out there. These agents are already risking their lives to arrest and detain criminal illegal aliens, many of whom are violent gang members. And now this? Send them all to Gitmo for treason. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With sunny skies across the area today, high temperatures will range around 50 in Bozeman to the mid-50s in the Billings area. For tonight, we can expect clear skies, lows in the upper 20s and low 30s. And then for Saturday with sunny skies, high temperatures ranging from near 60 in Billings to the lower 50s in Bozeman. Clear to partly cloudy skies continue into Saturday night. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Frobley.
The galaxy is safe once again.
In the pretend universe, kids play with pretend guns. In the real world, it's up to us to make sure they don't get their hands on a real gun. If you have a gun in the house, keep it locked, unloaded, and stored separately from ammunition. Safe gun storage saves lives. Learn how to make your home safer at nfamilyfire.org. That's N Family.
Thirsty Street Brewing, compliments of Newman Restoration, and a sandwich courtesy of Montana Melt.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
A very special Freedom Friday today. Coming up in just a few minutes, our friend George Blackard is back in Montana for a little while. So, of course, we're going to take a little while of his time today. He's going to join us coming up in the 8 o'clock hour of the show. So looking forward to seeing our friend George Blackard. I know many of you have been saying, hey, what happened to George? And we told you a while back, but I know sometimes you might have missed that show when we told you that George was moving to Texas. But he's back in Montana, so that's going to be a fun show coming up here shortly. Back to it here. We've got Ilya Shapiro with the Manhattan Institute on the phone lines. And, Ilya, thanks for sticking around with us for a few more minutes. Man, there's so many different topics we could cover. I want to go back to something you just said before that last break, which is, Why are the Democrats so focused on criticizing the fraud, waste, and abuse being identified by DOGE? I think a simple answer is that because they're profiting off of it. It's this slush fund. They're lining their own pockets with our money.
That has to be it, because why would they give up the fight over what they seem to care about ideologically, whether it's DEI or green energy or gender stuff? That seems like low-hanging fruit for their base, but no, the money bit is important. It was just uncovered that Stacey Abrams' group got a $2 billion grant, and it's like less than a startup. It's, barely exists on paper. All of these organizations that are getting this money filtered through so that the administration can pursue a left-wing agenda without having to do it directly, and it has all these groups that are being funded. I think that's a big part of it. I think it's also simply that the left is jealous that Musk and some of these folks that are effective in the private sector are taking that disruptive capability into the government and finally shaking it loose. And it's exciting to see because there's been a huge distrust and decline in public confidence in our institutions, and those who have gotten comfortable with it clearly feel threatened.
Yeah. Owen and Bozeman messaged us on our Montana Talks app. You know, I was talking earlier about the RV and boat show going on here in town. And he says, I'm thinking about buying a canoe so I can float down the river of liberal tears right now. Apparently today is Support Local Small Business Day. Buy local, et cetera. But apparently some of the liberals on the left are boycotting the economy today, which would make sense. They've basically become pawns for big business. And
is that like a French-style general strike, like nobody go to work or something? That's bizarre. This is constant virtue signaling.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, about a minute and a half to go. You're going to be on Fox News Sunday this Sunday, apparently, and you're going to be talking about, you know, the back and forth with all these judges. This judge says yes. This judge says no. Where do we stand with all these court rulings trying to interfere with Trump and Doge?
Yeah, and a lot of them are styled as temporary restraining orders, which cannot be appealed. But finally, one of them that a judge ordered the government to continue paying out $2 billion of USAID grants. That was blocked by John Roberts, by the Chief Justice. It's very unusual for there's complex machinations here how the process works. Typically, a justice would refer to the whole court, and then they evaluate something like that. But this was so egregious that John Roberts felt comfortable doing it himself to block what this district judge is doing. I think eventually they'll get the message. I think most of these challenges are going to end up going the administration's way.
All right. Well, hey, Ilya Shapiro, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Hey, folks, check out his book. I'm going to go try to get on Audible right now and download the audio version. Lawless, the Miseducation of America's Elites. Look forward. I'll have to make sure I catch Fox News Sunday this weekend for sure, just to hear more of what you have to say on that topic. Ilya Shapiro, thanks for your time. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, our good friend George Blackard with a special Freedom Friday. He's in the house. Looking forward to our conversation. By the way, we had Tim from Savage in during the 6 o'clock hour. He said to say hi to George as well, by the way. So did Becky. Tim and Savage lost 90 pounds thanks to Billings Last Diet. He's looking good for that basketball tournament today. You can, too. Go to BillingsLastDiet.com or call 294-6751.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
A housing reality that's been in place in the high-cost cities for many years has started to arrive in Montana, and that is this. It takes two full incomes to be able to afford a house. One-income households, even for many above-average paying jobs, simply can't do it, especially with mortgage rates above 7%. Now let's throw in another data point, child care costs, which can easily top $12,000 per year for a family with two children. Simply put, the cost of housing and feasibility of starting a family are intermeshed. That makes having a family even more of a dilemma. When both spouses need to work to afford a house, that can necessitate expensive child care as well. Those facts might help explain why the fertility rate, defined as the number of children born to women age 15 to 50, has been falling since 2007 in the U.S. A rate of 2.1 is considered sufficient to keep population from falling over time. Today's rate of just over 1.6 falls quite short of that. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.